Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. It's time for another edition of the best in paranormal talk radio. Darkness Radio's Beyond the Darkness is on the air. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. And we've got a great show lined up for you for the next couple of days as well. I'm really excited because we've got a good friend of ours who hasn't been on in a long time will be joining us on Friday. Troy Taylor is back. The Rise of the Spirit World and the Birth of the Modern Ghost Hunter. We'll be talking about that later on in the week. We've also got, I want to thank so many of you listeners have been sending in some really fascinating guest ideas, and we've been culling through the list, looking for good fits for our show, and we're so thankful that you guys are vigilant and bringing us some of the best topics out there, because we've had a lot of fun recently with some of the guests you guys have included. Tomorrow, we will have Richard Estep and Vanessa Mitchell joining us. They have a new book called Spirits of the Cage, True Accounts of Living in a Haunted Medieval Prison. That's on tomorrow night's show. Tonight, though, The X-Files and Philosophy. The Truth is in Here, edited by our guest this evening. We have Robert Arp, who holds a PhD in philosophy. He's the author of Scenario Visualization and co-author of 3 books, including What's Good on TV, The Philosophy Demystified, and he is the editor of 1001 Ideas That Change the Way We Think, the co-editor of at least a dozen other books, including Batman and Philosophy, South Park and Philosophy, You Know I Learned Something Today, and Breaking Bad and Philosophy, and Downton Abbey and Philosophy. We knew we had to talk to him when we saw the title of this one, The X-Files and Philosophy. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Arp.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Fascinating stuff. This is really kind of a neat way to bring philosophy and open minds and thoughts to different aspects of the paranormal. And I'm glad that you took a shot, especially with the reimagining and popularity of X-Files and the fact that they're bringing another season out next year. It's perfect timing for this. Talk to me a little bit. What did you really want to accomplish with this book, bringing this out and sharing these ideals?
Well, classical philosophy, Western philosophy, is concerned with 5 main areas. Logic, which deals with our ability to think critically and appropriately. And so we see a lot of that throughout several X-Files episodes. Western philosophy is also concerned with metaphysics, which in recent years has come to mean something different than what it originally meant for somebody like Aristotle. But so for Aristotle, metaphysics meant basically the study of what exists. And then that immediately branches off into like philosophy of religion, like does God exist? Philosophy of mind, do we have a mind? Artificial intelligence, that kind of stuff. So You see those kinds of topics discussed in the X-Files throughout the various seasons. Another area of Western philosophy is epistemology, which has to do with the study of of what we can know and how we come to know things. And so there are those kinds of themes in X-Files episodes. And then there are ethical issues. The ethics slash moral philosophy is another branch of Western philosophy. And then social political philosophy is the final of the five major branches of Western philosophy. And then there are a bunch of sub-branches as well. And there's other ways of carving up Western philosophy. But the X-Files does a great job of pondering a lot of those areas in Western philosophy. So I thought it would be a great way to bring Western philosophy to non-philosophers and bring non-philosophers to Western philosophy.
Now, can you help me with this, Dr. Arp? A lot of our listeners have heard the term philosophy, and you know, it's bandied about in conversation. But what exactly is philosophy?
Sure. So it's made up of two Greek words. Philos is the word for the Greek word for love or desire, and sophos is the Greek word for wisdom. So so philosophy literally is the love of wisdom. And then the next question is, well, what is wisdom, right? We think of somebody who's wise, we think of somebody who's knowledgeable, right? Then you ask the question, well, what is knowledge, right? And that's when then you kind of branch off into those five areas that I just talked about. So then when you look at the history of Western philosophy, the major philosophers in the history of Western philosophy kind of talk about those five areas that I mentioned. And in Western philosophy is traced way back to a guy named Thales, T-H-A-L-E-S. He lived about 600 BCE or BC in a Greek, little Greek city-state island called Miletus. So everybody who's a Western philosopher looks to him as the father of Western philosophy. And the reason why he's considered the first philosopher is because unlike – we've all heard of Greek mythology with Zeus and all the other gods. The way in which they kind of explained reality and things going on around them was to tell stories of the gods and said, you know, why did the sun rise? Well, the gods made it happen. Why did I kill so-and-so? Well, the gods made me do it. Why does it rain? Well, the gods – well, Thales was the first person to kind of take a look at – he was like one of the first scientists, really, and gave arguments for why things occurred around him. And he also tried to unify give a unified explanation for all of reality. He thought all of reality fundamentally was water.
Okay.
Yeah, so – so everybody kind of goes back to Thales. So he's the first philosopher. He's the first person to kind of do a little bit of logic, do a little bit of metaphysics, do a little bit of epistemology, do a little bit of ethics, and do a little bit of social political philosophy like I just mentioned a little while ago, that kind of comprise the knowledge base for philosophy.
Let me ask you, because, you know, a big part of our show has to do with the paranormal and ghosts and the examination of our existence and consciousness. What does philosophy tell us, Doctor, about consciousness? Where does it reside? Do they have any ideas on this?
Sure. Now, I do philosophy of science, so I think all the paranormal and all that stuff is bullshit.
Well, so, don't hold back, Doctor. Really, tell me what you think.
I think it's all, you know, it's all charlatan stuff, money making, fantasy, suggestion, fallacious thinking, wishful thinking, all that kind of stuff. And most of that stuff has been explained away. I don't think there's anything. There's no such thing as a god. There's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as any of this kind of baloney. I mean, any of these cold readings and spoon bending bullshit has all been debunked time and time again. So one thing that a philosopher is one thing about being a philosopher is you always have to have a healthy dose of skepticism. You never really believe anything wholeheartedly, 100%, other than the fact that you shouldn't believe anything wholeheartedly 100%. So when it comes to the – you asked about consciousness. Okay. Now, in all seriousness – well, all of what I just said is serious, but philosophy of mind is a serious issue, is a serious sub-discipline under metaphysics. And philosophers of mind are curious about the nature of consciousness. The question is whether does a mind exist separate from a brain, right? So everybody seems to agree that we have a brain, right, and that there are brain processes. But the question is there something over and above, something distinct from the brain processes, right, that makes us be what we are? And most of us want to say yes, you know. A lot of people will call that consciousness. Sometimes people will call it like qualia or experience. Those things can't be reducible to brain processes. But nobody yet has been able to kind of explain how it is that, well, what precisely is consciousness and how, if at all, it emerges from a brain, and how, if at all, it causes or causally interacts with the brain, especially seeing as though it seems to be so different from the brain. Like I said, I'm a philosopher of science, and I think nowadays philosophers in general are probably handmaidens of scientists. Like, most philosophers are at heart scientists. And they're just trying to kind of clarify what scientists are up to. In general, I take a scientific approach to things, and I'm just there to make sure the scientists aren't themselves overstepping their bounds. But in general, I think what they have to say about the way in which the world works is correct. So when it comes to the paranormal, I have fun just kind of, you know, going about whenever I can, debunking and ridiculing and making fun of it. So that you're having me on the show, you know, I hope I'm not offending anybody.
Oh, I'm sure you are, because most of the listeners believe in this and have had their own experiences. You know, it's easy when you say that to, you know, it's easy to dismiss, in your opinion, most of it's bullshit. How do you explain when people, especially in large groups, will have a shared experience of phenomena that is outside of the normal? Seeing a figure move through a room, or seeing things move without anyone there to do that. How does that work?
There have been documented accounts of what are known as like mass hallucinations or mass suggestion, or, you know, it's very,
actually,
you know,
there's never really been any proven mass hallucinations that have ever taken place. That's been injected into the conversation as a theory, as a possibility, but there's no proof that mass hallucinations actually take place. I mean, I understand that the way the mind works,
proof,
we can...
I mean, I guess this is the philosopher in me. Okay, what do you mean by proof? We'd have to unpack all of what I just said. Okay, so let's just take... I grew up Catholic, right? I was studying to be a Catholic priest. So everybody always would talk about those various appearances of Mary, mm-hmm. where a group of people would see Mary in front of a tree or in front of a grotto or something like that, right? So you'd have like a group of like 20 or 30 people who would see Mary, and then you'd have like 200 or 300 or 400 other people, including scientists, who would come and document what's going on. And then all of a sudden, the 30 or 40 people who would see Mary would say, "We see her, we see her, we see her." But then the other people would not see her. Well, I would say in that case, there you got a situation where, you know, and then they set up their recording, the scientists set up their recording devices and they see nothing, and there's other kinds of tests that they perform and there's nothing that is there. So I would say that's the quote unquote proof, to water it down a little bit, that shows that those 40 people are under a kind of a mass hallucination or a mass suggestion, because the people on the outside who are coming in, you know, who flew in that morning to Lourdes or wherever, mm-hmm. Are not seeing what these people are claiming to see. So that has been documented several times. So,
well, if we're in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you will, we have our own electrical system within us. We have our own receptors, eyes, ears, things that can pick up on different energy. Does it mean that because a group is having that experience and others are not, does that necessarily denounce the fact that it exists? Couldn't the people that are there, that are connected to this situation, to this phenomena that's taking place, and in some cases they're seeing it without prompting or knowing, you know, they didn't go into this room to see a man walk in front of them, yet 10 people see this apparition appear of a man who walks across the room and vanishes. So if there was no...
Yeah, but I take issue with what you just said. They didn't go in to see that. I mean, yes, they did. They, you know...
No, you go to Lourdes or Fatima to see Mary. If you go to a reportedly haunted location, you go in to see if there's anything happening there, but... to physically, you know, if you're not saying, yeah, there's a guy in a plaid shirt and blue jeans that walks across this room, it, you know, without that deep of a specifics, which most places don't have that detailed of an account, but there are places where people will go and they will see somebody walk through the room in a full-blown outfit that they're all able to detail exactly.
Yeah, but you talk, those are the people who already believe the baloney that is the paranormal. And they're the ones that are going to record that and say we saw it. The people who are the skeptics and are the scientists are going to come in and they never see that. They never record that. There's not one instance of that. So it's all preconceived bias and suggestion. They already want to see what they want to see before they go into the situations. That's all it is.
Well, you've got people like Tesla and Edison who believed that there should be instruments delicate enough that in tuning and creating an instrument delicate enough, you should be able to pick up if consciousness resides outside of the body and we do continue on in an energetic form after death, that there may be a way to communicate or connect with this energy. And those are minds of scientists. Those are, you know, people that are looking into the possibilities. And there have been multiple scientists and free thinkers and very intelligent professors that have gone out investigating claims of the paranormal that have seen and witnessed this. That's what's kind of fascinating to me.
I'm sorry. Let me make a distinction here. There's a difference between being open to where the evidence leads you and, walking into a situation I see what you're saying with Edison and Tesla. In other words, like of course scientists think that there's, like, right now the accepted theory, for example, it has to do with the beginning of the universe has to do with the Big Bang, right? So we're not going to just stop there as scientists. We're going to seek for some other kind of explanation, right? And we'll see wherever that leads us. So I'm not opposed to that kind of openness, and I'm not opposed to, you know, you walk into a site or you observe a phenomena and it kind of throws the paradigm off, right? I'm not opposed to paradigm shifts. That we know that has occurred and likely will occur as we move through through history. But there's a difference between being open to these kinds of possible natural phenomena occurring and the kind of preconceived supernatural phenomena that just keep getting replayed over and over by charlatans. I mean, I'm just repeating myself, you know, moneymakers and a kind of a mass.
But they've actually had, all the way up until the 70s, and there are still schools around the rest of the world that still investigate claims of the paranormal and put it to scientific principle that have recorded phenomena that they cannot explain.
None of that has ever, not one piece of evidence has ever made it into a respectable journal like Nature, right? As soon as I see something in Nature, then I'll believe it. You see what I'm saying? It hasn't made it into, it hasn't been able to be repeated. You have to be able to repeat the phenomena in a controlled environment. None of this is repeatable. None of that. You gotta. As soon as I see something in like science or nature, or like if it's in the medical realm, you know, in the New England Journal.
Right, but you do understand science takes a pretty hard-nosed stance, as you're talking right here. So when there are investigators that are looking into these locations and they've seen and witnessed and they've measured different aspects of what is going on there, and they try to develop these papers to turn in, you know, science is a fickle bitch, right? Because science will mock and ridicule and make fun of what it doesn't believe to be true until it's forced upon them, and then they finally realize, oh, it's real. You know, and I've brought this up numerous times on the show. Well, the doctor that came forward and said, you know, I think ulcers are caused by a bacteria. I think we can cure this with antibiotics. And he was laughed at. He was called a charlatan and a moron and an idiot. He was laughed at. He was a laughingstock of these different programs. And these were fellow scientists and doctors and medical personnel that mocked him, and what happened to be the truth? In the end, it's a bacteria that can be treated with antibiotics. So yeah, all of these deaths that took place, science screws up easily too, and sometimes they're not willing to take that look.
There, in that case, you've got one natural phenomena as an explanation for another natural phenomena. In these other cases that you're talking about, you got these supernatural, that's the difference. You've got supernatural phenomena, and the instruments that are utilized by these places aren't the kinds of the standard kinds of scientific instruments. I mean, the reason why they're not accepted in the journals and the scientific communities is because they're not standard, you know, they're like flux capacitor kinds of instruments. I mean, they would be accepted if they utilized the standard kinds of instruments.
But there are, as you just pointed out, there are no standard instruments for measuring paranormal activity. So we would have to create or alter equipment, which is how most of science has happened. We've taken one thing, learned that it can be used in different ways, and altered them to work as a tool in different, you know, different styles. So it's not always, you know, this tool is made for just this. A hammer doesn't just put a nail into a wall. It can remove, it can flatten, it can do many different things that it wasn't originally designed to do because people thought outside the box and used it for other things. So to say we can't, you know, there's no recognizable way to explore this phenomena because there's no tools out there and it's not recognized. Well, how do we get that recognition if science is not willing to say, okay, well, let's put together some parameters?
Yeah, and I think we're probably both being a little bit too not close-minded, but too boxed in. There are science is not that much of a fickle bitch. I mean, there are there is some leeway in terms of the instrumentation. And of course, there's research and development. And of course, there's creative ways of trying for example, the way in which we try to measure subatomic particles. We have to develop new kinds of mechanisms to kind of
right, because somebody comes up with a hypothesis and an idea, so we have to create the tool. So does that mean we should disavow it because the tool did not exist before?
No, I'm not. That's right. So I'm not saying that. But the thing is, I think the hypothesis you're starting with, though, I guess maybe that's what it is. The hypothesis is either outlandish or ill-founded or really based on a lie or based on, like I said, money-making or deception or, in many ways, I listen to these people on Coast to Coast, and, these people – a lot of them are psychologically, literally like mentally ill, So these hypotheses are they're kind of like the delusions, of madmen and madwomen. I mean, they don't make any sense. They're the result of fallacious kinds of reasoning, and so I think maybe that's what I have a problem with, is the hypotheses themselves are outlandish. And I guess getting back to, and this is why what I say in the X-Files, this is why I love this kind. So I love the paranormal and monsters and stuff like that. I read somewhere, I can't remember where I read it, but somebody wrote something like the scientific mind really loves magic and ghost type stuff and stuff that really is supernatural because it violates the natural and kind of excites the mind. I like to think as if, wow, it would be really neat if there was, wow, wouldn't that be cool if there was a monster, man? Wow. Or wouldn't it be cool if there was this other world, even though, I know there's not, as it were, So there's something. Interestingly enough, I know that the X-Files and the paranormal, unlike, I guess, your listeners, I in my heart of hearts, know that it's all just fantasy and made-up stuff. And I feel sorry for people who really do believe it. But because I know it's all fantasy and made-up, I get gain entertainment from it, really.
Isn't that funny? Because that's what they told Copernicus. That's what they told Kepler, right? Mendel about genetic inheritance. You look at all the different things that have been dismissed as completely ridiculous. What is it? Semmelweis, who said that hand washing will save lives, and he was laughed at and ridiculed. And, there's no science to back this up, yet the proof was there. Even continental drift, something as well known as continental drift, was a totally rejected idea. And to science, it sounded like some wackadoo coming up with an idea that's impossible. Just like global warming. Can't be possible. It's just there's more people breathing. We go through these cyclical cycles. There's people on both sides of the debate for many of these topics. To them, it sounded like pseudoscience and mumbo jumbo.
No, well, I guess I'm familiar with with the history and philosophy of science and those various paradigm shifts and those movements that you're mentioning and the laughing and
well, remember when the Earth was flat and we believed that, and we believed that we were the centric point of the universe and that everything revolved around us, and anybody that, as a matter of fact, if you believed anything else, you were found a heretic and you would be killed, or you would be ruined in your life for thinking these things.
Yeah.
See, that's where I always find an interest with this whole aspect of, you know, the philosophy and throwing the baby out with the bathwater, that it's easy to mock and ridicule and say that these things don't exist because you haven't had an experience in your life that maybe puts that paradigm shift into motion for you. Does that mean it's any less real for other people that have had that happen? And truthfully, have you put yourself into a situation to actually examine and research and go to a location that's known to have UFO sightings or ghostly encounters? Have you ever gone to one of these situations to see what happens with your own logical mind in these situations? Would they be, do you think that because you're already closed off about it, that even if it happened, you would logically dismiss it?
Yes and no, and yes and no. let's back up here a second. So, I think we probably need to make a distinction between what occurred prior to the scientific revolution and then what has occurred after the scientific revolution. So, the Earth being flat once the scientific revolution has occurred, then I think we've got a kind of a footing that it's like a point of no return. I think once that occurred, you've got to, you can hypothesize and you can be open to the evidence and you can be open to what occurs. And you can be open to these paradigm shifts, but it has to ultimately,
philosophy has changed since the time of Aristotle and earlier back, right? I mean, it has changed quite a bit. I mean, the basics have been there and in place, but a lot of the theories and beliefs behind it have also changed, correct? And isn't that because new ideas open and prove that past ideas were false and that there might be a brighter future or there may be a new way to do this?
Yeah, okay, so philosophy is a little different here. I guess we moved into science pretty quickly. I was kind of talking about science, you know, and I guess philosophy of science, but
right, but I'm looking at it as an entire, you know, platform is the fact that everything, all forms of science have changed through the times. And there have been dark times in our own history. I mean, as far back as only 40 years ago, there was not nearly the information we know now about cigarettes in science, right? I mean, that's why there's all these lawsuits now against big tobacco, because they were fraudulently putting things out. They were altering the parameters of experiments and the findings that were happening with it. So science and beliefs are, everything's constantly changing, and we're always finding new ways to examine these things. And that's kind of what always fascinated me about the X-Files, was you had these two people kind of diametrically opposed to their belief systems. And no matter how many times you could show one person that there is something outside of the world that they were used to, the next week we'd be right back to the same positions on the chessboard where this doesn't exist. This is impossible. No, it's not. You should open up to this.
Yes, right? That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Uh, what was I going to say?
Because that seems like a pretty good allegory for most of the way, you know, science is handled. When you start bringing up new ideas, you bring something, you show that there's maybe some credence to it, and then a week later we're right back to square one where it's no, this can't happen. And but we just saw this. We saw this hiccup. We understand that there's something going on. Now, you know, theoretically, yeah, that possibly could happen, you know, but I don't know. You know, and it just seems to bandy back and forth. Why choose the X-Files in particular to kind of feature this, to feature philosophy for you on this one, especially for somebody who's, you know, you're intrigued by the scary aspects of the monsters, but you have no faith or belief in any of that being a possibility.
It's okay. So it's not just the five areas that I mentioned, but it's good that you just mentioned, Mulder and Scully and the diametrical kind of opposition that they have. Cause you got one person who's a scientist and then, so one person who believes in the natural, holy, supposedly, right. And then somebody who's open to the supernatural. Open to the possibility of the beyond what you see, open to a deeper reality, deeper questions, that kind of thing. So when I'm putting when I take my scientific hat off and I put my philosopher hat on, then I see more of kind of the value of at least asking those kinds of questions the way in which Mulder asked the questions. And so yeah, you're right to point out that another aspect of the X-Files that's attractive to a philosopher and should be rightly pointed out in a book on philosophy associated with the X-Files is that that Mulder-Scully relationship that goes on, the skeptic versus the open-minded thinker, the scientist versus the kind of philosopher, the naturalist versus the supernaturalist. So that's a great that's rife with philosophical material. Also, the I want to believe. We hinted at in our conversation so far this idea that, or I think you may have hinted at, I definitely hinted at this idea that, people kind of walk into situations already biased. They have a preconceived idea, right?
Right.
So I want to believe, if you want to believe something and you walk into it, it's going to color your evidence. It's going to color the outcome. So I think that occurs in a lot of these paranormal cases. I want to believe, and so I walk in and I misinterpret something. And even people around me, I look at them and they look at me, and then we have the same misinterpretation. And then all of a sudden we have a guy in a plaid shirt, like you mentioned, or something like that, walking in a room or walking across a room. So it's like I want to believe leads to I form a belief leads to damn it, I know I saw a guy walking around. No, damn it, I saw a ghost or something,
All right, so, we need to take a quick break. We'll come back. The X-Files and philosophy. We're talking with Dr. Robert Arp. We'll do that more when we return to Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back. This is the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. Beyond the Darkness is on the air. Let me remind you, I'll be hosting Coast to Coast AM this Friday and Saturday. Friday, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about pop culture, talking about some of the most iconic TV series, from The Bionic Man to the V miniseries and TV series that spawned from it. What was it like to make TV in those times without the advent of CGI and all of the easy fixes that they do now for TV? We'll talk to a pioneer in that on Friday. And then Saturday, for you true crime aficionados, Soaked in Bleach, we're going to look at the life and death of Kurt Cobain and turn on a new light that you may not be familiar with. There is a belief that Kurt Cobain did not commit suicide, as we've been led to believe, and the evidence seems to be mounting and is becoming insurmountable to believe that there is actually a murder that took place here. How is that possible? We'll explore that all night on Saturday. That's right, all night Saturday on Coast to Coast AM. So check it out. And if you'd like to find stations and times in your area, visit coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com. You'll find all the information there on the site. And if you've missed any of this week's shows or any of our past shows, remember you can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on Podcast One. You can go back into our archives and keep up with us there. And speaking of archives, we've got a way for you to listen to our really old shows from back in 2006, 2007, and beyond. That's right. Now you can go right to darknessradio.com, darknessradio.com, and click on the archives, the archives section right there. And you'll be able to find a great page we've got set up with Conflict on YouTube. And they're going to be showing three different episodes every week. You'll be able to listen and hear back into our deep, dark archives as we continue to revisit some of our favorite episodes over the last 12 years. So you can find that again by going to darknessradio.com and click on the Darkhives tab. The X-Files and Philosophy. The truth is in here. We're talking with Dr. Robert Arp. Dr. Arp, let me ask you, when we're talking about all of these different ideas and possibilities, and, you know, we've even got people today, Stephen Hawking, you've got Dr. Michio Kaku, you've got some really great people with great minds, beautiful minds, that do see the possibility for things like time travel or ghosts, us exceeding beyond our physical form. When you see that there are people like that out there, are they just the rare wingnut to you? Or how do you rectify that into your paradigm as well? I mean, again, we're not just talking about some talking head on TV that they hired to say these things. You're looking at guys that spend their life looking at science.
Well, time travel is one thing within the context of what Hawking is, is getting at. Ghosts are another. I'm not familiar with what you mean by who's talking about ghosts. I don't remember Hawking talking about ghosts.
No, but I'm throwing out some, you know, time travel, UFOs. Hawking has certainly been outspoken regarding alien contact and UFOs, and a belief that if we keep sending out the signal, we're going to draw attention from the wrong people, the wrong species out there. So, again, that kind of falls back into the total X-Files paradigm of, you know, the truth is out there, that there is something beyond our little blue rock here in the middle of space.
Okay, so that's another interesting so now that's something a little bit different than the paranormal. That's – I mean, I think about the vastness of the universe and then the by chance, the luck that we had of being just the right distance away from our sun to produce life, right? Is that possible given the vastness of our universe? Sure, right? So I think that's what Hawking is getting at, and that it'd probably take a very long time to get to wherever it is that we, that part of the universe where there is that other Goldilocks, right? The Goldilocks, the just right distance from a star.
Right, but they're finding tens of thousands of those planets now that exist in these Goldilocks zones.
Right, but, well, at least we're not sure they're Goldilocks. I mean, it's too early to say. We're the only Goldilocks place.
No, it's not too early to say. Science has come right out and said it specifically. We have found habitable zones. These planets, these sections are right in the Goldilocks zone. These are the ones that would be far enough away from their star that would have the right gravitational pull, would be most likely to be habitable.
That's okay.
Not a theory anymore. That's a belief. I mean, it's what science is talking about.
Right, but we haven't. So it's not just the right distance. There's all these other kinds of factors that have to come into play to this confluence of factors that have to come into play to beget life. It's possible, but that. You know, is more believable to me because that's purely within the context of something natural than would be ghosts or, you know, or bending spoons or cold reading or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about in this book, you have 36 philosophers seeking the truth, which is out there. What are these essays? What is the basis behind them? And what are the different topics that they're tackling, and how are they looking at these different topics?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. It's interestingly enough, it's not just philosophers. So you got, there's a couple of lawyers who wrote, some English professors, one historian, and a couple people who actually aren't professors. So the majority are philosophers. So the book is divided into sections. The first section deals with the kind of tension between Scully and Mulder, along the lines of what we were just talking about before we took a break. The tension between science and something beyond science. The second section deals with the possibility of monsters and cryptids, cryptozoology, which is fascinating. The next couple of sections have to do with government conspiracies, the possibility of governments and government power. And whether governments have too much power, and actually some of it actually touches upon kind of Snowden type stuff, whether Big Brother, whether the government is like Big Brother, should be watching us, should have as much data on us as it has. The next section after that has to do with we take the slogan, "The truth is out there." And so we ask, what is truth? That's a fundamental question in philosophy. And then the section after that deals with that other slogan, the famous slogan, "I want to believe." So what are beliefs, and what does it mean to say "I want to believe"? Then there's a section on artificial intelligence. There was an episode, "The Ghost in the Machine," if you recall, from the first season. It's a great episode.
Right.
Yeah. And
so many of them are fascinating in the way that they look at these ideas and aspects. Although, you know, they're not so easily hidden that they've stolen a lot of the ideas right out of other movies, all the way from The Thing and on. There's most of the topics in the first season or two are lifted directly from other movies and Twilight Zone episodes.
Yes. And then there are chapters in here that take famous philosophers and talk about some X-Files characters and stories around them, like Heidegger. Martin Heidegger is a famous German philosopher, so there's a chapter that talks about Heidegger and the X-Files. And
Well, talk to me about some of these essays. What you were talking about, the cryptid aspect. What do they say? What are they looking at, and what can they apply?
Well, the fellow who wrote that, I wanted a kind of like taxonomy or category of the different kinds of monsters, creatures and monsters that are present in all of the X-Files stories. And so he put that together. It was really kind of neat. So if you take a look at that, he's got a taxonomy of the different kinds of monsters. And that's more of a kind of like an informational kind of a chapter. There's another chapter in there about the existence of cryptids, and it's kind of related to what I have to say in the introduction. And you just got through saying a second ago that you're going to be hosting Coast to Coast.
Yep.
And I listened to that show because I get up to go to work at like 2 a.m. So it's on when I go to work. And so I'll turn it on and listen to George Norrie.
Sure.
And so I remember on January 5th of 2016, when I was in the process of writing the introduction for this book, there was a guy on who came who said this: that there is no hard evidence of these cryptids is baffling because they exist. There are too many accounts of these creatures for them not to exist. One of these days, someone will find a carcass. They have to. Right? And so what I say in the introduction is that there are a few things to note about this. First, he seems to see the value of hard evidence, right? Mm-hmm. And that the carcass would be that hard evidence. I agree. But he hasn't appealed to that hard evidence in order to justify the existence of cryptids. What he has appealed to, however, is known as one of the most unreliable forms of evidence known to humankind: witness testimony, right? Crack open any law textbook dealing with courtroom evidence, and you'll see reference to hundreds of studies that have been performed in the last 50 years showing how people will claim to have witnessed events that did not occur or see objects that do not exist. So this goes back to if people have been listening to this podcast, kind of like what I'm trying to get at here in terms of, you know, hallucinations and not really people thinking that they see things that are not really there. There's even a phenomenon known as a mass or collective hallucination, whereby several people claim to see something that really does not exist, like the Virgin Mary at places like where I mentioned, you know, Lourdes. But so it's kind of like fallacious thinking. You know, several people claim X is true or is the case, therefore X is true or is the case, you know. All right. So the chapter, there's a chapter on cryptids that kind of talks a little bit about what I just got through talking about in my introduction, that, you know, a lot of these people who believe in like Chupacabra and the Loch Ness Monster and whatnot, basically take all these accounts of people and say, man, so many different people are saying that aliens exist. So many different people are saying that Mary is there. So many people are different people are saying the Loch Ness Monster. Therefore, it must exist, right? They must. And it just doesn't follow that, you know, you can't draw the conclusion that just because a bunch of people say that something exists, that it does exist. It's just a kind of a simple logical fallacy to point out. But
you've got, in the face of cryptids, you know, again, it's real easy to say, you know, this doesn't exist. But, you know, even as far back as about 125, 130 years ago, the existence of gorillas was laughable. There was no way that these giant, hairy creatures existed. They would see fleeting moments of them, just like we have Bigfoot encounters at this point, but they were unable to capture one. They were unable to have full-on encounters, and that's because the gorillas were smart. They knew what they were doing. They knew how to avoid and evade, and there wasn't body parts laying around all the time. People weren't just stumbling upon gorilla parts. So, you know, again, we're still talking that within the last century and a half, gorillas were non-existent as far as we were considered. But they eventually were proven and shown, and now we know them and they're seen everywhere.
No, I have no problems with the idea of discovering new species. It's just then that the new species will...
Right, they'll slip from the realm of cryptozoology into zoology.
Exactly, right.
But does that mean that because people are witnessing things like Bigfoot and creatures along that nature, and, you know, like you, some of them are fantastical, and Chupacabra to me is not some flying lizard that sucks the blood of goats. Bigfoot...
But check out... Look at the way in which the gorillas did in fact make it into the realm of zoology, right? They were documented, right, and then we're told where they were located. Field biologists were told where they were located. Other field biologists went back to where they were located and saw them. More came 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 and saw them. You see? You try to do that with any of these cryptids, and it never happens. Never. Never happens. You can't get somebody to set up a time and place to find them.
Right.
With gorillas.
But it could be said that is because they're bipedal hominid creatures that have always existed here. Are they just smart enough to work sentry and back up from us when we're coming in? Obviously, they're caught. I mean, police officers have seen them, many different walks of life, from, you know, stay-at-home moms to officers of the law and doctors have witnessed these creatures.
What creatures?
Bigfoot.
Well, yeah, what they think is Bigfoot, right?
Right, but we can eliminate the fact that it's a gorilla, right? We can eliminate the fact that it's a bear, because most of these hunters have been working in these woods and hunting in these woods for years, and they know what a bear looks like. So what else would be a giant 8 to 9 foot tall bipedal hominid that would be walking around in the wooded areas there?
Well, it could be, again, a mistaken... Well... Couple things. It could be a new species, right?
Right. Or an old species that's just really good at staying out of our view.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I gotcha. Right, I gotcha. But,
because it's fascinating with me, like with the cryptids, what I'm fascinated with about Bigfoot specifically, because it is elusive. And I think it's fascinating that you've had so many people from so many different walks of life see this. Now, yes. Like a crime, there's going to be morons that will just call it in order to inject themselves into the history. But then you have some really good people, including military personnel and others, that have come forward saying, we've seen these, we know where they exist, we know what's going on, and they're out there. And then you can even take it back to Native American culture and art, where they have cave paintings of these creatures and have explained away that, yes, we know they exist, they've been a part of our culture. And this was long before 1967 and the Patterson-Gimlin film. It's not like they went back and drew these characters on cave walls after that fact. So there's been documented proof throughout time.
And I don't, I mean, could it be that they were documenting something that has... Like you said, a gorilla or some other species that already has since then been documented?
In Utah, in Colorado, in Washington State?
Maybe another species up on its hind legs?
Could be. Some of them, you know, some of the elders in these Native American tribes talk about the fact that they've coexisted with this and that they are their own tribe. And in some instances, they just keep as far away from these hairy men or wild men as they possibly can.
They're also smoking a lot of the peace pipe too, right? I mean, right?
I don't know. You can generalize them that way, but I don't know that that's necessarily the truth in all, you know, cases. You know, that's kind of a...
Right. Yeah. I wonder if...
That's kind of painting with a broad stroke there, Doctor.
Yeah, I know. But I wonder if some of this may start that way and can continue on...
Well, the book is out and available right now, correct? It's already out in the stores, X-Files and Philosophy?
Say again?
I said the book is out and available in stores right
now,
correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So are we getting to, we're getting ready to... Getting to a close here then, I guess?
Yeah, we're coming into the end. The X-Files and Philosophy of the Truth is in here, edited by Dr. Robert Arp. We'll have a link up to the book and to the information. What do you hope that people get from this book? What is your desire in putting a book like this out? What do you want them to have as the takeaway?
Takeaway is just, like I mentioned, kind of like in the beginning of the podcast, just to... bring non-philosophers to a little bit of philosophy so they can kind of see the five major branches of philosophy and a little taste of the philosophical life.
All right. Well,
we'll
put out the books. You've got other books on this as well that you've been a part of editing and a part of. Philosophical approaches to the devil, the concept of hell, the problem of evil, new philosophical directions, philosophical approaches to demonology. Those are some of the other books that our guest and his co-authors and people involved in the books have had a part in as well. So we'll have a link up to that. You can find more information and you can visit his website at robertarp.com. That's robertarp.com. We will be back tomorrow. And again, we're going to take an interesting look at, with Richard Estep, Spirits of the Cage, True Accounts of Living in a Haunted Medieval Prison. We'll do that tomorrow on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Now, here's a special little addendum for today's episode. I know many of you that listened will probably be upset with one or both of us regarding the interview. After the interview ended, though, as my tape continued to roll, Dr. Arp and I had a very short, interesting continuation of our discussion, and I thought that you should hear this because I think it's almost as important as the rest of the interview. So, without further ado, this is the aftermath of our interview.
I have never been to like a ghost house or any of that kind of stuff, so that's true. Yeah, I'd have to do that and then go in with an open mind, that kind of thing. And then a lot of what you said about, because I guess I'm coming across like I'm closed-minded, and that's not how I want to come across. But
well, then you shouldn't start in the first 5 minutes saying everything that we talk about is bullshit. That will close off a lot of audience members. Dan. I don't care what kind of philosophy you're a part of. That's not a good one. If you're trying to prove that you're open-minded, calling everything a bullshit is...
You think?
Yeah. No, I know. That's the difference. That's...
Hey, but it makes for a great podcast, doesn't it?
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah. I hope that hopefully won't hurt your ratings. I would imagine.
No, I'll get one of two reactions. I'll get people that said, "What an asshole! Why'd you have that dick and give him any time on your show?" I'll have others that say, "You asked too many stupid questions. Why didn't you let the man talk? He's obviously more intelligent than you."
Is that right? No, probably the first one a lot more.
No, you'd be surprised.
More of the.
You know, I'm going to have naysayers no matter what I do, but I always find it funny because people that absolutely hate me, hate Tim, hate our show, but they listen every week. and they weigh in with an email every week about how much they hate it. Well, that's fine. Keep downloading it. That only helps us in the long run. So, no, I'm sure people will, you know, they'll find it a spirited conversation and interesting on both sides. And the haters will hate and the lovers will love and the rest can just enjoy it for what it is.
Thanks for, no, you're getting me to, I'm a philosopher, so I got to think about all of what you said, and I'm going to try to, if we had more time to talk, I'd temper a lot of what I, and rethink and recock and retool and maybe not start off with saying it's all bullshit.
Yeah, know your audience, Doc. You might want to reel it back at first. Let the passion build.
Thank you very much. Hey. Sure. A lot of fun. Thanks so much. And say thanks to the person who contacted me to set it all up.
All right. Yeah, Amy, I'll let her know. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.